Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2430. That's 2430. Tonight we're going to have a guest, and she is from Miami, Florida, and she is a survivor of sex trafficking. Okay, she's a survivor of sex trafficking, and she's quite a gal, and she's going to lead us on into her story about, you know, first starting out a little bit about her childhood, and then from there go into a little bit of the sex trafficking, how kids, you know, feel, how whether they're children or whether they're 21 years old, which is what she was when she was involved with that, you know, And she'll tell us her story her way, in her words. On this show, we don't ask people, you know, things, questions that they don't want to answer. So what we do is, this is her show, and this is the platform for her show. So I'm going to help her out here. We have Jo Kolk here also. She's going to be co-hosting with me tonight. And right now it is just myself, my guest, and Joe, which is fine. But the telephone number here, it's going to be an interesting show. The telephone number here is 595, oh my goodness, hold on. Oh yeah, 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And if you want to hear, you know, the story of a true survivor of sex trafficking, this would be the show for you to turn into, okay, to listen to, and to tune into, because it is quite a story. I have her bio in front of me. I'm not going to read her bio, but I'm going to ask her sometimes questions from her bio, okay? And today, being the survivor that she is, she does have her own program going, and is becoming an asset, I think, is the name of it, Becoming an Asset program. She created this, and she also has a blog and so forth. So, anyway, Bettina, her name is Bettina Hauser, H-A-U-S-E-R, Hauser from Miami, Florida. Welcome to the show, honey. Welcome to the show.
And, yes, hi, welcome.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You know, there's so much of this going on, okay, so much of this terrible human trafficking problem that's going on, and people don't realize this. You know, they don't get it. So when we have, you know, someone like yourself on who is so familiar, unfortunately, you know, with human trafficking, you can educate, okay, educate the people that are listening, and that's so important. Okay.
Yes.
Before we get into that, though, let me just start a little tiny bit from the beginning. Just tell us, what type of a family did you come from? Was it a loving family, or was there a dysfunction? Was it a dysfunctional family like all of us here?
Think that all families are dysfunctional to some extent. I also think that, you know, I was lucky that my parents had not been struggling with alcohol or drug issues whatsoever. However, my dad was emotionally very abusive to my mom, which I witnessed at a young age. And then at 16, I was raped, and that was the first very strong sexual occasion in my life. And then literally right 3 months after, my dad decided to leave the family. So that did cause a lot of trauma. What now I see looking back. And so the issue with like, with childhood things that at 16 years old age, that we are still a kid. Like people would might think that a teenager is almost grown up, but that's, I don't think that that's the truth, because a teenager is still a child. Like we need our moms and dads just so strongly. So when one of them leaves, that leaves there a lot of space to fill up. So that was that, and I think I was just disappointed in male gender so much. And then I think that these were the events what later caused the effects that I got involved in sex trafficking at an age of 21, how I ended up in the States. Yeah, so that was my early childhood.
That's a rough childhood. So many of us come from homes, you know, Bettina, that where there's so much abuse that's going on, that way, physical, mental, emotional, sometimes sexual, all of that. And it does a number on the child, you know, and for the children that are involved in the family. And if they lose their sense of self, they have no self-esteem. You know, there's just so many things that go on with children. A lot of times they become victims, too, if it's physical abuse. You know, there's a lot of physical abuse in the family. And it's hard
and
for children to watch. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And this is what I was going to say with the parents, you know, that even if we take a guy, so the mom and the dad has very strong effect on a child growing up, because for a boy, he's going to learn how to treat woman by the way how his mom taught him, right? So this the same way goes to girls too. So during my trafficked years, every single girl who I met with had the so-called daddy issues. Every single girl was left by her dad at some point, or was disappointed in her dad in such a level that just takes a whole chain of events down there on the road later. So
I can believe that.
Yeah, it's just a very important connection to make that parents have responsibilities in kids' life growing up. And mom and dad, it's very important. Like, it's very simple, you know. A kid has safety in her home in the home because of the mom and the dad. So if one of them leaves, then half of that safety leaves with it too. So, of course, that child is confused. Like, if somebody would take away a mom or a dad, how in the hell are you not supposed to be confused? Right?
That's so true. That's so true. And that so often, you know, it's single parents, you know, that try to raise the children, because a divorce happens, you know, or even if the divorce doesn't happen, the other spouse, maybe it's the father, many times it's the father takes off, or sometimes the mother takes off, whichever it is, the child is left with one parent, and that one parent many times isn't equipped, all right, to, you know, take care of the family. That,
exactly.
Maybe it's monetarily or emotionally or a combination, spiritually, or all of them go together. So it makes for a rough home for children. Yes, it does.
And also,
I just want
you
to
know, like, to...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
So I was just going to say we have two more people that have joined. I just want you to know there's two more people on the panel too. And I want them to know that I acknowledge that they're there. Okay. We'll go to the panel. What we do is we go to the panel every 15 minutes, okay? They might have a question or make a comment about what you're saying. And again, this is like an educational show. And where we try to educate people, you know, about child abuse. And, you know, we've already discovered that you, like us, you know, you're in the right place. You came from, you came from a dysfunctional family. And when children come from dysfunctional families, it can affect them in all different ways. Sometimes we turn to alcohol and drug abuse. Sometimes you know, we run away. Sometimes we become very promiscuous because we're looking for love that we don't have at home. And it can affect the child in many, many, many different ways. You know, eating disorders, all kinds of things can happen. And in your case, you became involved with the human trafficking. And that was at the age of 21. And it was evidently based in Florida. And
yes,
you
right.
spent a part of the organization for a little over 3 years. You're involved with that. Tell us what went through your head in those 3 years.
First when I was here, there was a lot of stages in it. And to be quite honest, I didn't even acknowledge the fact that I've been trafficked until I was done with it, because I just kept telling to myself that no, this is not happening to me. No, this is something what I caused myself to be in this situation. No, I was the one who failed, and that's what resulted in me to be here. And again, like going through trafficking, it's so many times like the self-esteem of the person, it's so destroyed that I was genuinely believing in that this is all what I was born to do. So my perception at the time was like, if this is all what I can do, then where am I going to go? Because it's going to be the same everywhere. So I genuinely didn't think that I was more than that.
Mhm. Mhm. Right. Well, you look at yourself like this is, I don't have any self-worth, okay? We don't say that to ourselves. We don't have any self-worth.
Yeah.
But our actions, you know, speak volumes, you know, just by the way that we behave. That's why when you know, girls, I'll speak about girls. I mean, it can happen to guys, too. But, I mean, you know, like when girls go out and then they're much too much, you know, promiscuous on the streets, they don't have any self-worth. They don't have any feelings of self-esteem. They don't consider themselves to be, you know, to have value. And so they go along with the program. That's what they do. A lot of times they do that, you know. They just go out there
yeah.
and they have to survive, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah,
and
this is more of a survival
than
anything else.
Yeah, let me ask you something. Did you by any chance, like so many do, did you get involved with drugs and alcohol?
Oh, of course. Like I had a whole history with both of them. So alcohol for
mm-hmm.
me was never something what became addictive, but drug was
mm-hmm.
definitely something what I took way too far, and there was it like. I never really had the urge to wake up after a night when we were drugged out and start taking it again. So my addiction was never on that level. But
mm-hmm.
what I never had, some people have the sign what has in your brain that now it's the time to stop. So I never had that. If I went out to party, then I could have gone for days, for weeks, and maybe I slept for a day and then the whole thing started all over again. So that is, I would say that there are probably a couple of years when I know that I lived through, but I couldn't identify moments in it then, like, oh, in December this happened, oh, in June this happened. It was just like days meshed together, and I would remember the clubs where I went or people who were around me, but not really the days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, somewhere, you know, in our minds, you know, when we're out on the streets, because I was out on the streets, okay, I wasn't being trafficked out or anything. I just ran away from home a lot. Well, there was a lot of abuse. But at that time, certainly, I had no feelings of self-worth. You know, I had already been told I was stupid. You know, I wasn't going to amount to anything. And I was being abused at home. So I figured, well, I don't want to be here. You know, let me get out of here. So a lot of us end up out on the street. And I actually made friends out there, Bettina. I did. I was the youngest, and they put me under their wing. You know, they watched out for me, and I drank far, far, far too much. I was popping Quaaludes. It's amazing that I'm alive because of the Quaaludes, a combination of the alcohol and the pills. And but I had no self worth, and this is what we do. And then all of a sudden, maybe, hopefully. One day we wake up, even while we're still doing this, you know, or what you were doing, you wake up and you start thinking, wait a minute, you know, maybe I can do better, you know. What kind of a life do I have here now? Is this living? Is this, like you said, is this what I'm going to be doing? Every day was like the same as the day before. Okay.
Yeah. You know,
because,
I kept asking so many times. Yeah, I kept asking so many times that is this what God's plan is with me? Is this all what I was born to do? Like, that just can't be right. And then, and especially when drugs started to involve, I'm like, this is not a life. Like, I could feel it that, you know, my energy wasn't right. I didn't wake up being motivated about the life. I haven't had goals. My biggest goal was maybe, you know, to make it through the week without drugs, which clearly didn't happen at the time. So there was a lot of questioning myself. I was also questioning God, like, a lot, that what is he doing and why is he making me go through this? And I didn't even believe in, you know, like, now I go to church, of course, and I think that it added a lot to my life. But at the time, I didn't think that God had a bigger plan with me than I was at the time.
Well, a lot of people are very angry with God, and they think that God doesn't love them, that they're not worthy even for God to love, and he's supposed to love all of us. This happens so often, you know.
Yeah, you know, I started to think about it in a different way, because I think that about 100% of the time, it's really about our perspective. How do we look at it? And going through human trafficking, it is horrible from the beginning until to the end. And I do not wish to anybody. But what did it bring to my life, right? Now I have the opportunity and the privilege to have other people to talk about it, to bring awareness, to educate others that this is a growing issue and we can work for it, against it, and I can motivate and help other women who I know they need it. And I wouldn't be able to do the job. Yes, I wouldn't be able to do the job if I wouldn't have the past that I had. So finding God, the way how they explained to me in the very best way once, it was, God is not a person sitting in a cloud and looking at people that you're doing great. Like, he genuinely loves everyone. But finding God is finding the connection in between events. When you see that one event led to the other. So when you try looking at it from that angle, then it really doesn't matter if it's Christian, Muslim, or whoever. It's about looking at the connection and understanding that the life has a bigger purpose than just making it through the day.
That's right. That's right. And it's amazing some of the things that we have to go through in our lives, you know, before we realize that we are people of worth, and this is actually our mission in life, is to teach other people, you know, that you can go through all of these horrid things, these heinous crimes, okay, because trafficking is a horrible crime. And, you know, and still today, you're standing. I like to always say that. You're still standing. And not only are you standing, but you've started, you know, a program, which we'll get into in a few minutes. But I do want to go to the panel. I want them to say hi to you. Oop, I have a black screen. Mm-hmm. There we go. There it is. I want them to say hello to you. And let me go to Joe from Oregon first, okay? I'm going to open up her mic. And she's my co-host tonight. There you go. Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. Hi, Bettina. Mm-hmm. Did I pronounce that right?
Hi, Joe. How
Bettina?
Are you? Yes,
good.
Yes, it was perfect.
Good. I'm sorry for what you went through, and I'm very interested in finding out how you got yourself out of it or how you got out of that. So I know that's coming up, but because that sounds like sort of a deep hole that you were in this is what my life is supposed to be, and that's really a sad place to be. And so
I got out, it's that I actually ran away. There was a day like after 3 years, 3.5 years, when I was it was just enough. And then it was for a couple of months when I started to look for windows in the day, when I had the possibility to go places where I could buy a phone card to have a phone number, or to, I was actually in New Jersey, I'm not quite sure where I was because it was very confusing the way how I got there. But it was in New York State, and we were not far from New York City. But I know that I was somewhere around, and I know that there was a day when I was just like, and I didn't have too many clothes or nothing at the time. I have literally had one suitcase, so I was just like, the time it's now. Like I just had to leave. So that's how I left.
Wow, that was very brave, actually, very very courageous of you, and also that you didn't totally buy into the, well, this is supposed to be your life for the rest of your life. So I applaud you for that, for having that strength.
You know, also in human trafficking organization, the biggest thing what I think scares people is the threat. So, because everyone always, and traffickers love to say that they have people everywhere, they are watching the victims everywhere, and they know about their each move. And this is not true. But I needed years to figure it out that this is just BS. Like they physically cannot have the apparatus, the stuff to watch the people. So I was in a full belief for years that there are literally people around me watching what I'm doing who I don't know they are, you know, even on like on an airport, on the grocery store. But this was just so false. So I had to identify that. And then after I was like, I kept telling to myself that I'm like, you know, it's not true. So what are you so scared of? Just walk out.
Wow. That's good. That is good. I'm impressed. Thank you.
Yeah,
I look forward
me too.
To hearing more of your story.
Thank you for the question. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Joe. I'm going to go down now to William. Okay. He's from Alabama. Okay. William, welcome to the show. Say hello to Bettina. Are you
hello.
There?
There I am. I unmuted my mic.
Hi, William.
Very
how are
lucky
you?
Because I've been involved. I'm good. I've been involved in some things like that I've seen, and they do have people that watch them and enforcers and things like that in some of the organized human trafficking. Now, she may have been in the independent where they try to pretend like they're the big guys, but they're not the big guys.
Related to that question, so when I trafficked, I was in Florida, and in Florida, it was a pretty big organization, and I know that here they were operating in a different way, and I didn't get the opportunity to leave here because there was nowhere to go, and I know that there were a lot of people working for them, and we were watched in the apartment outside, but then there was a point when he sent me to New York for whatever reason, and I know that the New York people worked differently. And I felt like that in New York, that's my option to leave. If I don't leave there, then I'm never going to leave.
Right, but that's what I said. You made a clean break, and it was a little guy, because some of these people, when you leave like that, you put yourself in danger, but you got to be brave enough. I got to get out of here.
Right. I felt exactly like, you know, that I have to take the danger and I have to take the risk, because to take the risk that staying here, that's the worst. So regardless, whatever happens, that just only can be better than this.
Right. But that's how they hold you back. I mean, that's how they control you
right.
and things like that.
The number one best thing to control a person is to keep it in fear. Because then you are surviving and you just want to make it through, but you are not, a person doesn't evolve. It's just looking for the basic needs, what they have, and to safety. So, and I think that that's the biggest weapon what they use, you know, keeping people scared.
Well, not just keeping them scared, but keeping them dependent on their needs and things like that too, because it involves money, cash, organizations, and it's actually organized crime.
Yes, of course. Yes.
That's exactly right. Thank you for that, William. I'm going to go down now to Darlene. And she's from Tennessee. Hey, Darlene.
Hello there. I have empathy
Bettina.
For you.
Hi,
I
Darlene.
Said Bettina.
How are you?
I am
Go
okay.
Ahead.
Thank you. I have empathy for you. I was myself was done in some ways from my parents, the ones that sold me to the men and stuff, and from an early age, from age two and stuff. And that it don't matter whether it's organized or unorganized, because mine at, you know, were basically at home, my parents, you know, and that was really not an organized situation, but it still was a dangerous one, you know. And so
yes.
Yours was a very dangerous one as well. And kudos to you for getting out.
Yeah.
Really. Really.
And
yeah.
Fresh, thank God, you know, he protected you.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I was very lucky and very privileged to get away.
You have
I know
you
for a fact that not. Say it again?
Do you have you a book in the works or what?
My book
she,
in the
she
works? Yes.
She doesn't, I don't think so. Actually, what she has is a program that she created. But
yeah.
Do you have a book in the works? That might be a good question, darling. Wait a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. This is the funniest question, and thank you for the question. I'm actually having a book that I'm writing about the story, but that's not out yet. I'm actively working on it, and it's a lot of work. But I have a website.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be justbettina.com. And I also have a YouTube channel where I share part of the story and how to get out and do motivational tips and educational videos about human trafficking. The program what I created that's helping for safe houses and for nonprofit organizations working with human trafficking on educating the survivors and helping them come back to the society and helping them to find their professional purpose and helping them to become a healthy part of the society again by overcoming their own trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So these
yeah.
are the programs that I think, yeah.
Yeah, that is a very good. I recommend you to write the book because I think there's a lot of people that's even in here that's listening or around that want to know your story and read your story and have your book personally as well.
I would love to send you a copy when it's done. It's under process, but so actually writing a book, like I'm finishing my degree right now, and then I started to write a book because here is how it goes. I'm like, I gotta write this. But then after once you start writing it, then you know you see that how much more work it takes than you thought at the beginning, and
yeah.
writing an actual book takes a lot. So, and especially because my language is Hungarian, right? So English for me is a
right.
second language. Yeah. And then so if I would have to write the same thing in Hungarian, then I can hear it what sounds right and what doesn't. Now doing the same thing in English, then I have to read it first to myself. I have to read it to someone, and I have to keep reading it to make sure that it does sound English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Well, see, that's what a lot of people, that's one of the hints that they give to writers when they go into edit is read it all yourself and see if you forget,
yes.
see if you find anything with mistakes or whatever. So that's a good that you know that's good that you're doing that.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that too. That was a good question, and
because
it's not in her
question.
Bio, you know, comment, whatever. It wasn't in her bio, so. You know, it's a good thing you brought that up. Thank you for that, Darlene.
Yeah.
So now we know. And she's going to send a copy, by God. And then you can let us know. Okay. So that's good.
Is she still on the line?
Yes, she's here. She's here.
Oh, okay, perfect. If you subscribe with me on my website, justbettina.com, just send me your address, and I'm happy to send you a copy whenever I'm done with it.
Oh, my God, you're a lucky girl. You're a lucky girl.
I'm working on my book, too, so the gift that I would do to reciprocate to you, too.
I would love that.
How about that?
Okay.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you, darling. That's great. Yeah, you see, it's so important, the work that you're doing, because human trafficking is happening everywhere in towns, you know, and it doesn't have to be cities either. Okay, this is what people have to understand. We try to educate people to this. I had to do a presentation at Centenary College on human trafficking. I learned a lot before I went. You know, plus I'd been out on the streets. That's probably why they chose me. But the point is, it's, you know, it's like maybe four or five houses down. You know, a kid can be taken right from your yard. Okay, usually it's the younger kids. They can be taken right from your yard. They disappear. I always get fearful when I go into Walmart and they have all those kids up there that are missing. They're missing exploited children on the wall. And it gives the dates, you know, of when they were missing. And one thing, too, with human trafficking or whether it's an organization where children are pimped out and it's not quite human trafficking, they're not leaving the area, but they hold them, say, like in Newark, or they hold them in New York City, or one of the biggest cities, wherever. They have almost like a time limit. Go ahead.
Yeah, so actually, as of human trafficking, New York City, it's not even in the top three cities in the state. So Miami, it's one of the biggest ones. Atlanta, it's, of course, leading, and you're going to be very surprised on the third one. I'm curious if you can guess which one is it.
Well, it's actually, you know, it happens everywhere. See, that's the point. And what happens is they, you know, children many times do end up in the bigger cities because even if you're taken from the country, okay, you're kidnapped. I was kidnapped when I was 8 years old, but I was not trafficked out. None of us were. I was one of 14, though, okay. Now, they dropped us off. So the point is, you know, whether you're in the country or whether you're in the city, it doesn't matter where you are. You're being trafficked out and you're being pimped out and all this other hard, terrible stuff. If you're a child, many times you're sent across seas. That can happen, too. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. So people out there, for God's sake, who's listening tonight and who will be listening later on, learn more about human trafficking because it's something that's happening even as we speak. Okay, as we speak right now. Some kids, Go ahead. This is your story. You go ahead and tell it. You tell it like it is. Go ahead. You tell them how often.
Okay, so just a quick data for everyone to understand the size of it while we talk about. Human trafficking brings in more money annually than drug trafficking. We're talking about $150 billion dollar annual profit from human trafficking, and this is a growing business. Each year there are more people trafficked and there is more money to be made. And what's even worse than this, in every 30 seconds there is a new person becoming a victim of human trafficking. So if we are on the phone right now for 30 minutes, then you can do the math that we had 60 other people be involved just in the time when we are on the phone. So it's just when you make these connections, then it's easier to understand the size of the issue, what we are talking about.
It's awful.
And the more, so this, it's not necessarily happening in a way when somebody is being kidnapped and taken away. It's very often people are being convinced and brainwashed and taken away, and then it's just too late by the time they realize the problem. And this can happen like really, literally in the next door, and people will never find out. So it's so important to talk about it and bring awareness and educate people on what they have to look for, like what are the patterns in behavior or like visitors when they can identify that something is going on in the apartment right next to me.
Right. And you see a part of the problem, that's right. Right next door can happen. They say that every fourth or fifth house down, like in an urban area, there's some kind of abuse going on. Well, that abuse can be human trafficking, too. Someone can be, you know, ripped right out of their backyard, and they're gone. They're gone.
Yeah.
Okay? And no one knows where they're gone to, and it just turns into an awful thing. So, and it happens to boys, too. Okay. This is one thing. I always, yes, because I remember, of God's sake, I saw a movie years ago, which was part of something I had to do for a class. And I think it was Taxi with De Niro, but I'm not sure. I could be wrong on that. But we were told to watch this movie because it spoke about human trafficking and kids, okay? Teenagers. These are more teenagers. And it showed the boys, okay? It showed the boys that were being, lured out into the street. They thought they made a friend. And before they know it, they're being, oh, my God, they're being pimped out. And they're being used in all different terrible sexual ways. And, you know, if you don't bring in enough money, I don't have to tell you this, if you don't bring in enough money, you get beaten. You're supposed to make a certain amount of money every single day, okay? And there's
exactly.
No vacations.
Everybody has a quota. Yeah, everybody
yes,
has to
quote
what they have to meet with. Yep.
Mhm.
Yeah,
that's right.
And yeah, so males are just as involved in it as so. Human trafficking brings in actually many different things. That is labor trafficking. That is sex trafficking. So it's not only sex trafficking when it comes to human trafficking. And guys are the part of it. And also, what's even more surprising that. Sometimes as of the trafficker, we identify them as male, but lately it's actually a lot more female who becomes a trafficker than male. And this is, it was even a data what like blew my mind. So these females are moms, daughters, and they still have the courage to sell other people. And I was just like so amazed because when we've been taught in elementary school that when a guy walks to you in the street and tells you something, then be cautious. But we've never been taught that when a lady walks to you and tells you that she has a candy or whatever, then you should be cautious, and we should be just as cautious.
It's a horrible thing. And you know, parents, they should, speak to their children. Assuming that it's a good family, okay, one that's not dysfunctional, you know, to teach their children, right, to teach their children, you know, that this can happen. It does happen.
Right.
Not just can. It does happen. And, you know, if people approach you, and I'm not just speaking about stranger danger here. That is, you know, that's just so far down on the list there. Not that it shouldn't be spoken to children, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it's the other types of abuses. But human trafficking is like in a category of its own, okay? Because a lot of times kids, they're taken to the airport because they're going to be shipped somewhere, okay? Or maybe they're being shipped from somewhere to the States. And all these things can happen. And I know that today that they're trying to teach the airlines, they're trying to teach taxi cab drivers, other organizations, you know, what to look out for with children. Like if children are dressed, I'm going to just say this, too sexual, okay, for their age.
Yes.
And they're very quiet. They might be very skinny. They're not allowed to speak. And maybe they're in a taxi cab because they're on their way to go somewhere, a function of some sort where they're going to be used. Okay, for the purpose of sex, okay? And so what happens is these kids, they're so frightened, they're so scared, so they're teaching people what signs to look for. They don't make eye contact. They have trouble making eye contact. And then also,
they
too...
They also have what questions,
without a question.
That's what
right.
The biggest... You know, so on the years when I was trafficked, there were like a very specific list of instructions what we had to follow, and not looking into someone. So one of them was that try to be unnoticeable. Don't talk to anybody who you don't have to. Don't make eye contact with them. Don't chit chat. So like they were trying to isolate us as much as possible from every single conversation, and then. Another big instruction was like I remember like it was yesterday the way how they told me that I should not be talking about anything on the phone because the phones are being tapped. So that was also a big deal, you know, because even if I talk to someone, I don't have the opportunity to say that, wait a minute, something is happening. So I remember all of these instructions like very clearly, and also like I had to use fake names. So like going to an airport or something, yeah, there I had my ID, but everything had to run through fake email addresses. I had to go by fake names. People around me couldn't even know my name. So these were all like very specific instructions.
That's right. They are taught. They are taught from day one. Okay. This is what you do. This is what you don't do. Okay. And if they, a lot of times these, you know, whether it be children or young adults, you know, whatever the case might be, they're beaten. They're hungry. They're not taken care of properly. They sleep in dirty, many times in dirty surroundings. And they're just pulled out of their rooms, and used. And you have to go out on the street, and you have to strut your stuff. That's what they used to say.
Yeah.
Strut your stuff. And, you know, and it's really, really, really a terrible thing that happens to children and young adults, you know, which you were only 21, so. That's still to me very young, and I'm so glad that you were able to muster up, you know, the courage to get out of that, because so often children are broken spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and young adults as well, so that they can't function, and then they're out on the street for maybe 5 years, and then after that, they don't even want you anymore because, you know, you're too far gone, or maybe you've died in the meantime from the drugs.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that a person who had to go through this trauma is always going to be broken. The difference is that how do we deal with it? Because, and so later, like, for example, like now I do have a stable relationship, but I couldn't have any kind of relationship, you know, before, because I know that I wasn't the one who could maintain it, even if it's friendship, if it's like a romantic relationship, and the brokenness always stays. But it's very important to identify that and then to start working on it. So I used to have a therapist at the very beginning when I got away from trafficking, and I used to see that lady for like about a year, and I genuinely think that she changed my life, because I didn't believe in the therapy to begin with. Like, just like any other traffic victim or survivors, I went there for the first session with a major attitude that I'm like, oh, don't tell me, I know it. And then I'm like, I don't need help. I especially don't need your help. Like, that was the way how I went to the first session. But this lady, she was super sweet, and she just kept asking questions. And then on the third session, on the fourth session, like the next thing, what I see that I'm just sitting there, keep talking about the story, crying. So, and then it became into a stage when I started to work on the brokenness, and most of the healing really happens day by day. So from a trauma, a person doesn't heal from one day to the other. Like from flu, we do heal on the way that, you know, your nose doesn't run anymore. You don't have the sore throat anymore. And then you wake up and you're like, okay, fine, I'm cool. Now, from an emotional trauma, it's not like that. It's a lot more of discovering stages of the healing every time, and it's also looking back and being able to say that I healed over like a couple of years period of time. Then that's a lot more possible. But again, I don't think that a person who has been in a victim of human trafficking never going to be 100% healed, because you can take away the memories, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But we can build this into strength, and that's really what I think everybody should do, because these are tools what has been given to us. And if someone survived trafficking once already, then, I mean, come on, like, what else can come? Like, they are already a lot stronger than they ever thought they're going to be. So what comes after is going to be easy. The hard part is done. So I just really encourage always everybody that who is out, then the hard part is done. Now the easier part is coming.
Well, that's true. That's true. And, you know, I know you have a program also. I'm going to go. And that's wonderful. And before I go to the panel, I just want to say that some years ago in New York City, Lexington Avenue, around that area there, they had a program, and it wasn't funded, though. See, that's the thing. It wasn't funded. And they would go around and they'd try to pick up girls and guys, too. I mean, you know, yeah. younger, you know, teenagers. And they would bring them in and they'd give them food and clothing and beds. And they had people who were actually working overtime from being teachers, trying to teach them, helping them get their GEDs, things like that, you know, so that they have something to work with. And they had counselors there. You know, to work with them, to help them with their low self-esteem. So I know these things because I know these programs. I was a part of some of them. And so I know what you're doing. And we're going to go around. We're going to go around the panel now and let them have a question or a comment. And then I do want to get into what you're doing today because I know it's wonderful. Okay, sweetie, hold on a second. Let's go back to Joe. Joe, go ahead. You're on.
Thank you. Okay, Bettina, I was wondering, you ran away, but what, did you find somebody to help you? Because you're just as lost now, right? Because you're away from the situation, but you don't have any place to go to, right? So I was wondering how you handled that.
Yeah, when I ran away, then I had a friend. I had a friend in Las Vegas who had me at the time, and then I was staying with her for a while. And so that part, it's a lot of confusion. Like, that's the best way how I could describe that part, because from human trafficking, it's always like somebody always told me what to do and how to do it from the second I woke up, what I can eat, where do we have to go, whatever. And then after not having this supervision on the life, I was so confused up until to the moment. What really helped me to fix everything, it was really when I went back to school, because school gave me a stability. So that was something to look up to. There was something, you know, when I knew that on Monday I have to be there. I know that I had homework to be done. So that's what helped me a lot.
Oh, wow. It hadn't occurred to me about the, you know, nobody telling you what to do. And, wow. I'm hoping that you can write your book and explain that to people. Because there's a lot more to it than just, you know, just escaping from the actual people or the situation.
Oh my God!
But the whole recovery is amazing.
It's a lot of things because before also it's not believing, like having a very low self-esteem is one thing, because again, you know, like I was very deeply convinced that that's all what I meant to do in my entire life. The first time, and this is actually super funny, but let me tell you this story. So my first day in school, when I went back, then again, you know, like I still have it in my mind that, oh, you don't speak good English. I wouldn't make it in the U.S. I don't know how to study properly. I'm not smart at all. What am I even doing here? So that was my first day. And then when I finished my first semester with the 4.0 GPA, I was so surprised.
Oh,
I'm like,
wow,
did these people do a mistake? How this went, then later on, the school started actually very heavily funding me, and I had, like, incredible scholarships later on, like, last semester, my scholarship was a little bit over than $20,000 for a semester, which was incredible. But again, on the first day when I went there, and I remember I was so scared to even ask questions, because I'm like, I don't even speak English. Like, they're not going to understand why I'm asking. And the first test came, and I'm like, okay, cool, that made it to 98. Okay, that was 99%, you know?
Wow.
She did a wonderful job.
Cool.
She did a wonderful
Thank
job
you.
In school. Because it has right here. that you had a 4.0 GPA in almost all of your semesters. That's wonderful. I mean, my God, that shows you not only you were a survivor, but you're also very smart. And between the two, okay, that's why you're where you are today. And
thank you.
You know, you're doing just fantastic. And you're an inspiration for many, many people, okay?
Thank you so
Let me
much.
Go to William here. He may have something he might want to ask, a question or whatever. William, your mic is open.
Well, that's one of the important things about the education and stuff, because a lot of people, when they come from a different country and stuff, they may not know English real well, and it's kind of, well, man, I can't do it, or I can do it, but they can't. They have problems at first without help and stuff, and that's another issue.
At the beginning, when I came here, like, you might not gonna believe this, but so when I came to the U.S., I actually spoke. I speak Hungarian, of course, but I already spoke Italian and German, and English. I didn't really fluently spoke English. But then I remembered that when I went to Starbucks at the first time in my life and I was asking for a coffee, they didn't know what I'm asking. So my English was clearly not proper. Now, still, as of today, I know that I say many things on a way how it doesn't sound English, but I also know that people understand me. So,
right. Like, well, you had another advantage because people like in Chicago and New York, a lot of those people speak Italian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because there were many families that immigrated.
That's right.
So a lot of times the immigrants, like the Italians, would be able to help you.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I think I got very lucky.
Is Hungarian in the Slovak language?
So Hungarian is actually
Slovak?
Different than everything else. Yeah. So Slovakian people and Russian, they don't speak our language, and we do not understand each other at all. So Hungarian language, it comes from somewhere from the same root as the Finn languages. But again, nobody understands us, and we don't understand anybody in Europe. It's a completely different type of language.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was kind of independent from what the other languages are.
Yeah.
But the other languages, you know, German and Italian might help you in this country even.
Okay, so what it tells me that I genuinely think that to learn the next upcoming language is going to take half as much time as the last one what you did. So what this means that German was my first language, and I learned to speak German in elementary school. So I was very fluent in German by the age of 14. And then
okay, now
40,
is that the high or low German, or did you learn both high and low German?
What do you mean by that?
The proper German and the slang German. There's like a high and low German that they talk about.
Okay, so I learned the proper one because I also had to do my language exams by that time, by the time I finished school. But I was also in Germany twice for student exchange, so I got the chance to spend time around German people. And
that was good.
As much as that was really good. So that's why I think that experience definitely helped me, that like just because people were speaking in a different language, that was not the first time that it happened in my life, and it didn't scare me that much. And speaking English, for me, it was an accident, and I always say this, but that's really what it was, because every time, like, if you have a glass of wine, you know, or just a drink, then suddenly your confidence become a lot better by speaking it. So then after I was comfortable with speaking English, and then I already spoke German and Italian at the time, so I just kept using the words or sound alike words in English, and then it just became better. But again, still today I'm learning words, and I'm learning expression, and I'm learning things and ways how to say things, and I don't think that it's ever going to stop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, William. Yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was German's a hard language. It's a very hard language, and English is not that easy to learn either. Because when you say red, I read a book R-E-A-D, and there goes a truck. It's R-E-D. We have all these things in our languages. So I again have to commend you because you're learning rough languages, you know, with the German. I know that's a tough language. On the other side of my family, it's German. I have a French, Italian, a German, and Swiss in Maine. So
I generally think that German is actually, I think, the easiest language to learn. And I'm going to tell you why. Because German language is just like German people. They have a rule for everything. So you exactly know when you start building the sentence that this has to come here and there, and these are the ways how they're putting it. So they have a very strict rule for the way how they build up. Now, Italian, that's a different story because Italians, they have the rule and they have more exception for the rule than the rule.
Well,
I was
that's
never
true.
Perfect in Italian.
Well, that's true. Okay, well, let's go down to Darlene. She might very well have a question for you. Go ahead, Darlene.
Yeah.
Sprechen wir Deutsch? Tasha, you speak.
There you go.
There she goes.
Yeah, Tasha is broad.
Yeah.
You know, say I'm a person, you know. But anyway, I am so glad you learned all that. And so you said that was your first language that you learned in the first grade?
Well, German was the one what I learned back in Hungary in elementary school. And then Italian, I did it in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then English, I did English in the U.S. I had some ideas about some words back in Hungary, but when I came here, I clearly haven't had a solid English language knowledge at all.
Yeah, and like when she was talking about the word red being spelled as R-E-A-D, you got to put that also, red is also read.
That's right.
You're right.
You're right. That's what makes the English language so confusing.
Too, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's a good girl, darling. Thank you. That's true, though. But that's what makes the English language so hard, though, because read, spelled the same way, and then the red truck went down the street, S-R-E-D. It makes no sense.
I have something even funnier. This is, this is something what I found out last week. So I heard people around me, my friends, calling each other dogs. So, and then in my mind, it goes through that, why the hell would you call another person dog? Like, they are not dogs. And then I told them, I'm like, well, can I be a cat? And I didn't get it. And then after I come home, and then I asked my friend, and I'm like, hey, so, and he's American, and I'm like, so why are people calling each other dogs? Like, that's kind of rude. And then he goes like, well, yeah, that's not dog, that's like dog. And like... You know, in the slang.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah. So you're right. So there's all different things about the English language that are really strange. We have our slang, and we have our a lot of languages have slang, but we have heavy duty slang, and then we have almost like the British is so exact, precise, that type of thing. Type of English where it's Yeah, it's hard. Let's get back to your story go ahead.
There's that country song when it says, "Which joint was still joint, was still bad place to be, but now joint is not just a bad place to be, it's actually, smoking a joint."
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We know about smoking joints. Yeah, we do. I don't know what she called it. I don't know. But Tina, what did you call marijuana? Did you just call it reefer or something? I don't know. Oh, God.
I don't know.
It was drugs. That's what it was. It was drugs. But, that's true. There's so many different ways of so many different interpretations and everything in the English language. It's a rough language to learn also. But anyway, let's get back to your story because time's going by. We only have half an hour left, and maybe even less than that, and it's going to go quickly now.
No. I'm having so much fun.
I'm having a great time. We all are. Bettina, tell us about your program, because I looked at your not your Facebook, but the other, and it said that you had created Becoming an Asset program, and I noticed that there were several women that were on there. I didn't get a chance to see the whole thing, but tell us about your program and what it entails, what you do.
Yes, right. So the first thing really started out that I wanted to do a YouTube channel, which I did since then, and on my YouTube channel, it's specifically addressing women and talks about human trafficking and as of the issue as a whole. And so then after, I just kept thinking that how can I add to the society that I went through, and I genuinely think that at this point, I can't fix myself for 100%, but I know that I built my weakness into my strength. And I genuinely think that I can do the same thing to others, because I know what are the steps what someone has to go through because I did it. And mm-hmm. So that's when I had the idea that I'm like, oh, wait a minute, I could help other people. I'm like, if I could have, then I would like to have, because I know they need it. And I also know that, when at the stage when I just ran away from trafficking, and if somebody would have come to me saying that, hey, I can help you, I know how to fix your life and put it back together in about a year period of time instead of make it into 5 years, I would have been like, yes, please. Like, what am I doing? So that's what my motivation was to creating Becoming an Asset. Becoming an Asset, that's a 3-month program. And what walks through each woman on the steps to how to evolve, how to become better, what stages are they in, how to comfort themselves, and that's the goal. And I'm working with safe houses, and I'm also working with nonprofits to teach that, even to Zoom or even like locally. But like, of course, when this COVID came, then this changed many things. So most of the conferences are running through Zoom right now. Mm-hmm. So that's why Becoming an Asset came, because I genuinely think that every person, especially every woman, we have our superpowers. Some of us is better in drawing. Some of us is good in building businesses. Some of us is good in makeup, in hair, or whatever. But each person has to find the one what they are good at, what they are exceptional. Like, you are exceptional in leading the radio show. That's for you to do, right? For me, I'm very good at teaching, and I love to do it. So, but you have to identify your strength, and you have to also learn how to go with it and how to build it into your purpose and into your passion and into your future. So that's why Becoming an Asset came and has been built, because I genuinely think that each of the women can find their purpose and their drive and build it into a success story.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And you give people hope. You see, this is one thing that, when you're out on the streets, you don't have any hope, you're
right.
Just trying so hard to survive. And it's a very, very, very bad place to be. And where you ran away from was probably a very, very bad place. Just like in my situation, many, many, many people, who run away from home, there's a reason for it, okay? And then you had been raped also before you got involved with this. So that, I'm sure that blew your mind. You were, 16, I think, when that happened. Is that correct? How old were you when you were raped? I forget.
Yeah, I was 16, and in fact, that was my very first sexual experience. So that's why I think it also did so much damage, because, it brings, I really, as of a woman, I was questioning myself so many times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it does to children, though. You see, it just strips us of any childhood, any part of us that could be childhood is gone. Because once you're, sexually abused, I mean, all the abuses are bad, okay? It doesn't matter whether it's physical, sexual, mental, emotional, or neglect. They're all bad. But when you're sexually abused too, when you're sexually abused, that just strips you away of yourself. And a lot of people dissociate. You know, they go off into different worlds. There's all kinds of things that happen because the brain just can't handle all of that trauma.
Right.
And there's just so many things. But so many of us do run away from home. You know, I had a brother that was a nut. That's who I was running from. And no one cared, okay? So, you know, you run to the streets, you go to the streets, you get a part of the streets, you become the streets. The city has a pulse. You're a part of that pulse. And, you know, you get into the drug scene. And, you know, you can be trafficked out. I was not. I had friends there. I actually went there for safety. And I'm not saying that people should go to the streets for safety. That's stupid. But on the other hand,
I had
friends there. Yeah. But they took me under their wing. It wasn't the same type of situation, but I saw it all, okay? So I understand, you know, from where you came. I understand from where you came. And the very fact that you're so put together today and you have your program. Then I noticed also, too, on the bio here, it says here, educational program. That's what you're speaking about. It says human trafficking. And through her educational
right.
program, help them build a successful future while they become
yeah.
a healthy part of the society again. Yes, that's what it says here. If a girl, say a young lady is brought in, okay, to your program, and she's
yeah.
fresh off from the streets, okay, what do you do with her? What's the first thing you do with her?
You know, the first thing is really, you know, to establish a comfort and a trust in between us. And that's why I like to say, it, you know, when I start working with someone, then I'm coming from the same background. Because at that point, you know, they know that it's a different perception when someone, it's an outsider tried to solve my problem, what they didn't live through, what I lived it through. So I think then when we talk about that part, then it always brings a lot of trust. And then I like to build trust because for me, working with someone, it's a lot more than just having a client. This is, it's personal, because if I can just change one more woman's life out there, then my life already worth it. Like, that's why I wanted to do it, you know, because then I know that they won't go back to the same surrounding where they came from. And that's what the ultimate goal is. So in the first month on the whole program, it's really about mental health a lot more, of how to deal with damage, how to comfort myself, how to deal with anxiety and depression. Because, so believe it or not, human trafficking is actually causing PTSD just on the same way how, for example, like, you know, military personnel. It's different because this woman, again, just the same way how I did for years, and I didn't know why, you know, sometimes randomly I could have just sit down and start crying for no visible reason. And these are part of PTSD, because it's a lot of damage what a person from human trafficking had to go through. So the first month actually really deals with mental health and how to work on these things, how to bring comfort, how to accept ourselves, our future, how to identify what happened and how can we move through. And that's really what's at the beginning of the program, because I genuinely believe that first, to be able to move on, we have to establish the problem, 100% of it. That means mm-hmm. that I have to see what I did. I have to see my 50%, and I have to see their 50%, because a person won't be able to heal until we're just blaming others. That's going to be a blame ball, and that's not going to heal me. So I have to see what I'm doing, where did I fail, where did they fail, what I could have done better. So these are at the beginning of the program, because these are the most important steps to establish and to get it right. And then after, we can start breathing. But from the beginning, we have to get on zero, not on negative 10.
These girls that come in, I'll call them girls because a lot of times they are teenagers, these young women. But not always. When they come into the program, they're so filled many times with self-hatred. Okay.
Yeah.
I know this because there's a part of them that knows that they're doing something that's wrong. There's another part of them also, too, that knows that they have to because they need to survive. And there's a part of them that would love to be different, but they feel so weak and so useless and so like the scum of the earth because they don't think that they have anything to offer anyone else. They don't love themselves. They hate themselves. And they feel dirty. I always use the word dirty. I know that I felt dirty because of what I did out there. Go ahead.
I felt dirty too, and I felt dirty for years after, and that dirt just never wanted to leave. I love teenagers, but my clientele, it's a lot more of like in their 24s, 25s and up, because I think that kids, a teenager is still a child, and a person has to be ready for one thing to grow. And I also know that a child needs an additional care and a special care. And I would like to make sure, you know, that they look for professional help because each of the person who I work with, you know, they have to be ready to one thing to work. So they have to get to the stage on their own when they are like, yeah, I want to change that. So I cannot change somebody's life who genuinely doesn't want to change. And
that's
so
right.
Many people are so confused, you know. So most often, the best thing what really we can do to hurt people is just to hold space for them. So many times, you know, like I would just talk to people, stay around, and I don't force my program or anybody, you know, until they come to me and they say that, hey, you know what, I see what you're doing with other people. You know what, I see what you're doing with yourself. Can I be the part of it? And then I'm like, of course, you are more than welcome.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because teenagers, okay, they are so terribly, terribly confused. And then also, too, don't forget, the pimps are talking to them and they're saying to them, hey, go down the street and work at Mickey D's. I call it Mickey D's, McDonald's, and see how much you're going to make. Now, if you stay with me, okay, you're going to make lots of money, but that's not the case. Even though they do better by being with them many times than going down to McDonald's. And they have to understand, though, the difference. When you get a job that's not a part of the sex trade, you're building a future. I don't care where you start. I don't care if it's McDonald's, Burger King, or whatever. And after time, and it is my charter working with teenagers, I'm using them as an example for just momentarily, because if there's people out there who have teenagers, I want them to understand that, children have to understand that even if you make more money doing one thing, it doesn't mean that it's going to help your morale. It's not morally correct. It's going to tear you apart, okay? And if you work at a job like Walmart or something like that, it doesn't matter. The point is you can build yourself up and you can have, you know, your self-esteem. You learn to love yourself, okay? But so often they tell the people that come in there, oh, you'll just end up working at places like that, you know. And they downgrade it. They make it like something lower than what it is, and it shouldn't be that way, but they use it. And that's why some of them stay out there.
Yeah, so having a job, it gives very different, like making an income, that's just one thing, but it brings so many other things into a person's life, such as like stability, you know, a system, a built-in system, learning how to deal with other people around us, learning how to have supervision, management, completing tasks, you know, so it's a lot more to it, like, my first job, in fact, it was in a McDonald's when I was in 16, 17, I believe, and I was in high school. And then so after, when I ran away from human trafficking, then my first legal job was also in a restaurant, and I started to work there as a busser. And I know that what it brought into my life, it was I knew that I had to show up at 4 every day because I know that the restaurant opens and I have to be there. So
that's right.
making the life busy, that's the only way to get out. Because if the days are empty, then a person is going to fall back very easily into the, okay, what am I going to do? And, of course, I need money, you know, like I have to pay the bills. So to building a very strong system and staying busy, I think that this is the key, really, to grow through it, staying busy. Because if school is there, if work is there, if this there, then a person doesn't have time to run the mind over things what doesn't matter and what's not beneficial because they are busy. They are also busy to run away for alcohol or for drugs because they have to wake up the day after and they are tired enough that the second when they get out from job, they just want to go home and sleep.
All right, let me ask you something. These people that come in, if they do need help with their education, are you able to provide that for them? Like
of course,
you said, to get
their
GED and all that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I actually applied for. That's the same thing. The reason why I know it is it's because I've done it. Because I had to figure it out. Like I had my high school diploma when I came here, but I haven't had any ACT, SAT, none of it. And for me, it was very challenging to even get ready because, you know, it wasn't even on my language. But so, yes, I'm very much able to help with it because I know how to look for legal advice, how to look for immigration attorneys and help with immigration status. I also know that how to help with education, where to get student loans, where to apply for funding, where to go for financial aid for actual institutions, and what to say, how to say it. So because all of these human trafficking survivors, they are actually eligible for so many fundings and grants that having a good GPA or a good performance in school, that's one thing, but bringing the status, that's a lot more. Because remember, institutions wants to support these people. So really what a survivor only has to do is to go there and say that I'm here. They just have to know that what's the status and what's happening. And this is what my experience was. Every single school and institution and office wants to help. Because the second when they hear it, they are like, oh, man, let me see what I can do for you. It's not even a question from their own.
That's wonderful. That's great. I'm glad you're doing that, because that many times holds people back because they don't have any education at all. You know, maybe they have, say, 10th grade education or something, and they need more than that.
Right.
They need to move forward, and even just to get their GED and then move forward from there. It's as simple as that. Let me go to the panel here. We have,
okay.
I don't know, I think about 11 minutes left, and this is going very fast, and you're just a wonderful guest. You most certainly are. Let me bring Joe on. Joe, your mic is open. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was thinking that a lot of what you can bring to the people that have just come out of sex trafficking is your understanding of what they're going to be thinking, like, well, somebody needs to tell me what to do or how to get there,
right,
and all of that. And so you're taking you're coming from that understanding rather than saying why aren't they doing something for themselves or whatever. And so that is a very valuable information that you're bringing, and also builds the trust because they can say, oh, yeah, she does get it. She does get it, you know, that kind of thing. I was wondering how you get program. How do they find you?
So at the beginning, it started out really with Facebook groups that I participate in, multiple groups, human trafficking support organizations whatsoever, and sex trafficking organizations. And then I also have multiple conferences, live shows with safe houses, nonprofits who are working with this. So I'm making sure, you know, that there is definitely a presence of me. And most of this I can refer to back to when I said that I'm giving comfort, you know, like on the on the groups and the pages and on Facebook. Like most of the time, really, I'm motivating, I'm talking to them, and I'm becoming their friends and their partners. And because it's very important for a survivor or for a victim that they have to have, they have to want the change. I can't force
yes.
them. That's
yes.
why I don't believe in the technique, how I can go and send an email to Nancy saying that, hey, Nancy, I see you in the group, and I think that you should do this. Because she's going to be like, well, yeah, and what? Why am I going to do that? But, like,
mm-hmm.
if she talks to me
mm-hmm.
and if we have a relationship and if she sees that, oh, well, this is just, but, you know, it's really something what it's a proven idea what works
mm-hmm.
and what other people are doing, and I like what she's talking about, then she's going to have the idea saying that, you know what, let me reach out to her and let me see what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
that,
great.
You know, and that's
yeah.
a very different approach. And then I'm like, hey, Nancy, I'm just so happy to talk to you. Of course, tell me what happened to you and tell me how can we work on it.
Mm, that's great. Because like you said, you can't, people change. You can't change them. And
right.
and you understand that perfectly. And but to make yourself available, and then when they're ready, they're coming. I love that. I love your program
yeah, you.
And what you're doing. It is so needed and so helpful. Thank you so much. And I learned a
thank
lot
you
from
so
you
much.
Today.
Yeah, you bet. This has been a very, very, very good show. Very informative, too. I like that. Let me go down to William. William, do you have a question or comment you'd like to make?
Yeah, does she include, like, life skills for them, too? Because many of them may not have the life skills, the like, balance checkbooks and do other things like that, too, with some of those people, because everything was done for them.
What are you
yeah.
referring to by life skills?
Well, I think that what he means by that is, you know, a lot of times people don't know how to write a check, say, which is almost becoming obsolete. They don't know how to go
well,
and get credit cards and things like that, how to
oh, right.
Budget, you know, to budget and things like that.
Yeah, so I definitely do. So I have the program, it does have on finding education, it does have on finding jobs too, because I think this both is a very important part of it. And I also have very direct connections. One more time, this seems to be a difficult word today. Connections to attorneys, and I'm also helping in every single need what they have. So if there is an issue where they need to apply for a bank account or get a phone number or doesn't know how to go to Social Security Administration, then, of course, I do help, and I tell them step by step how to do it, where to go, where to get it, who to talk to, what to write, how to get unemployment checks. Like, I help through the entire process.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's great.
I think it's
yeah,
a very important part of it because, yeah, as you said, that, like, many people, they don't know this because, first of all, they probably didn't even exist on paper, starting by they have no idea how to do tax returns. They don't know how to fill out a legal form or these kind of questions, which, again, for me, this was also a part of a learning process. Like, I remember my very first attorney appointment when I had to go there, and physically I spoke English, but did I speak the language what the attorney was speaking? Hell no. I was sitting there so confused, and I was like, what is he saying? Like, I understand that he speaks English, but besides English, what does that mean? So, yeah, definitely, I have everyone to walk through this process because, again, I know how lost I felt, and I know that it's very important to give guidance and to give a clear help. And sometimes legal language has to be translated into our normal language, saying what does that mean. And I like to do this for my clients and for my ladies who I work with because I know that this is what most of the help is.
Okay, well, thank you for that, William. And you're so very right because, like you said, it was all taken care of for them. I think, William, you said that. In other words, they didn't have a say with the monies or anything when they're out on the streets and all these things because they were being managed. Yes, they were in a bad way.
And so then when they get into your program, they have to learn, you know, the simple things in life, the things we take, we just take for granted every day, how to write a check, what is the statements, and how to work computers, and most of them know how to do computers, but, you know, all the simple things that we take, you know, for granted, you know, they have to learn. So it's a big, big job that you have. Let's go down to Darlene here and see if she has a question or a comment to make. Go ahead.
Hey, Bettina, you're doing a whopper of an awesome job. I don't know why I should phrase it like that.
Thank you.
Because it's so, you know, it, a lot of it, you know, that is good that you are not only raising the awareness of the problems in some of today's society with this, and we can call this a pandemic too, you know.
Right.
You know, as bad as its trafficking is, and sexual exploitation is exploited, whatever. I'm sorry for the mix up, but I am so proud of you for doing all this. And
thank you so much.
Just you got a lot of admirers and people that's pulling for you, and people can listen to you too because it is recorded, so we can get back, and people who want to, you know, might have missed tonight might be back later too and listen to that. And I'm so proud that I could call you sister now.
That's right, she's
thank
a family
so
member, absolutely. You know, I think what I'd like for you to do is tell people your website, because I know you have one. That's where your blog is, I think. And
right.
Yeah, why don't you, because that's not really on here. It just says educational program, and it says human trafficking, but there's no actual website. So why don't you tell us the website
really?
So that people can look at that. Yeah, go ahead.
That's weird. Okay,
look
so
you
my
up,
website... Yeah, so the website is justbettina.com. It's JustBettina.com. And Just Bettina is also going to be my YouTube channel where they can reach out and watch the videos, what I previously posted on JustBettina.com. There is a description from the program Becoming an Asset. So there is a whole description explaining the program. Just as well as I just launched an online store with clothing items for women specifically designed super high quality, what goes also supporting the cause and working and helping me working towards to the goal. So there is also connect with us section where if you just go to the website and just shoot me an email. Tell me that you heard me on the radio show, and just connect with me because I love to hear more opinions and all the feedbacks. Is just it means so much because this is really where I know that how much I can do and where can I help for people and how can I connect with even more ladies than I already did. So please make sure everybody who listens to connect with me and subscribe to my YouTube channel because it's a lot of fantastic info what I'm happy to bring, and I would like to just keep continuing my work as I did before.
Well, you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job. And that is justbettina.com. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay, right. That's what I thought it was, justbettina.com. Okay, that's Bettina. That's how you spell Bettina, and then justbettina.com. Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. You know, our show is over. It's over. It went fast, okay? And I wish we could talk to you all night. You're so interesting, and you taught us so much. You know, people out there don't understand about human trafficking. After tonight, if they listen to this show, and they will, there'll be plenty of people, they'll learn more about human trafficking and what it feels like being out on the street and all of that. It's so, so, so important. And also, you gave the facts and figures before about how often it's happening throughout this whole show. It's happened so many times that children or younger adults were taken, okay, for human trafficking. I want to thank my panel for being here tonight. We had a wonderful show. Bettina, you can call in any time you want just to be a part of the panel if you'd like. And
thank you
in about
so
a
much.
Year's time, we'll have you back again, okay?
All right.
And good luck with your book. Okay, that's
so
going to be wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay.
I was happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, Joe, play the music. And we'll end up the show. We'll wind it up. And good night, everybody. Stay safe.
You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.